the Senate Special Committee on Budget, Public Safety Subcommittee for Thursday, June 23rd, 2005, for the purpose of a work session on House Bill 5125-8, Oregon Youth Authority, and a public hearing on Senate Bill 232 relating to juveniles. And we will be at ease for just a couple minutes while we await the arrival of Senator Devlin. Should be here shortly. And Ms. Baker, if you would like to describe the information in front of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I handed out a memo to your offices yesterday, and there's copies there for the audience describing the proposed changes to House Bill 5125A, which is the House's version of the Oregon Youth Authority budget. House Bill 5125A, as it is essentially the same budget as the Senate passed out in Senate Bill 5580, the exception being the services and supplies and capital outreach reductions that were made by the House, and that totaled $781,066 general fund. So what the recommendation is at this point is to adjust the House budget in House Bill 5125A in two ways. First, there's $61,585 that the agency has available from previous certificates of participation issuances. Money's left in the account after the projects have all been closed out. And that general fund, or excuse me, that other funds can be used to offset general fund as a one-time savings for debt service costs in this 05-07 budget. So we propose that you make that adjustment. And then the second adjustment would add back $394,623 general fund to the House budget level to restore the services and supplies and capital outlay reductions in the agency's facilities and capital improvements budgets. So the adjustments that had been made, through the reductions that had been made in community programs and administration for services and supplies and capital outlay remain as is. So there is a reduction in the budget, but the facilities and capital improvement budgets are restored to the level that the Senate approved initially. So I've attached a spreadsheet that shows those adjustments and then the bottom line for the agency, and then a conceptual markup of House Bill 5125 with the conceptual amendments, basically hand engrossed version of that. So we would recommend that you approve a budget for the Oregon Youth Authority with those adjustments. The total would be $207,261,511 general fund, $12,592,343 other funds, $25,925,815 federal funds, total funds of $245,779,669, 1,086 positions, and 1,044.21 FTE.
And Ms. Baker, for the record, I just want to establish that we do have the approval of the Senate Budget Chair for the conceptual amendments to House Bill 5125. And Senator Devlin, I will take a motion to move adoption of the conceptual amendments to House Bill 5125-A.
Okay. Madam Chair, you don't want me to deal with the budget note yet, or do you, should I?
Do you want to do that now or after the numbers?
After.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move to adopt... I move to accept the conceptual amendments to House Bill 5125A as conceptually presented to us by Ms. Baker.
Discussion? Objection? Motion is approved. And now the discussion of the budget note.
Madam Chair, Both the House and Senate Budget Subcommittees heard the report on the Youth Safety and Abuse Prevention Review Committee's work today. There were some preliminary recommendations that were presented to both of the subcommittees. The Oregon Youth Authority has done an initial cost estimate of those. They total to about $825,000 general fund. However, because those were preliminary recommendations and there may be more or other recommendations forthcoming, and we would suggest that there be more legislative discussion of those recommendations, there's no recommendation to fund any of those at this time. Instead, there is a budget note that is recommended, and it asks the agency to report, or directs the agency to report, to the Joint Legislative Judiciary Committee at its first meeting during the interim, and then establishes that the agency should report to the emergency board if additional resources are needed to implement any of the recommendations that they're planning to go forward with.
And again, just to add clarity to the record, that first report to the interim Joint Legislative Judiciary Committee is a report, the final report and recommendations of the Youth Safety and Abuse Prevention Review Committee, which has been appointed by the Oregon Youth Authority. Senator Devlin, I will take a motion to move House Bill 5125-A as amended to the full Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Discussion? Objection? We are going to approve that motion as well, and we will now close the work session on House Bill 5125-A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 232. Do we have the parties from for Senate Bill 232 present? All right. We will be at ease for just a couple of minutes while we get ourselves together here. Very good. Okay. Ms. Matthew, if you would please describe what does Senate Bill 232 provide for?
Certainly, Madam Chair and Senator Devlin. Senate Bill 232 establishes responsible except for insanity as an affirmative defense in juvenile delinquency matters, provides dispositional options for youths who have successfully asserted the defense, appropriates general fund to expand the PSRB Psychiatric Security Review Board to include a 5-member juvenile panel.
Very good. And Senator Brown is very timely in her arrival. Good afternoon.
I have none of my stuff. Is that okay? I think
I'm going to get my ice cream chair to pull up. I'm going to do this on my own. This is over here.
Okay.
However you'd like to proceed.
Thanks. Good afternoon, committee. Thank you very much for hearing Senate Bill 232. For the record, State Senator Kate Brown, representing Senate District 21. Just to give the committee a little bit of background, we created the Oregon Law Commission, I believe, in the 97 and the 99 legislative sessions. I became a member of the Law Commission immediately, and after a couple of sessions, my juvenile folks approached me about some juvenile code, both dependency and delinquency fix-ups. We created the Juvenile Code Rewrite Commission, which is a group, frankly, of about 45 to 55 folks representing all aspects of the juvenile dependency and delinquency systems. We've been meeting for close to 5 years now on mostly a monthly basis to try and do fix-ups to the juvenile system. The Juvenile Psychiatric Security Review Board is before you today. This is a bill we've worked on for a couple of sessions. We think it's a really critically important bill, and we really appreciate your willingness to hear this. I'm going to turn it over to the certified smart people. To my right is Judge Terry Leggert. I'm going to say Judge Deanne Darling, that's who I thought was coming. And to my left, she is from Marion County. To my left is Mary Claire Buckley. She is currently the director of the PSRB board. We were unable to, I didn't know who else was here. We were unable to get someone from the district attorney's office in this short notice, but Amy Holmes-Hain has participated extensively. But this work group has been fairly large and fairly lengthy. So, Judge Leggett, do you want to take it away? Or do you want Mary Claire?
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, for the record, I am Mary Claire Buckley, and I have served as the chair of the subcommittee on what has come to be the Juvenile PSRB work group. Today we have a number of individuals who are going to give you basically a quick overview of what actually the bill does, and then we have with us individuals from different stakeholder groups, including Bob Nickel from the Office of Mental Health, Karen Andall from OIA, and others who will speak when we address the fiscal impact of this bill. So if Kathy Berger is going to give the overview of the...
I'll move.
...actually the need for the bill and what it actually does.
Thank you very much. And good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senator Devlin. My name for the record is Kathy Berger. I'm a criminal defense attorney for the past, for over 14 years. I was actually a staff attorney at Juvenile Rights Project, representing juveniles who are charged with what would be crimes if they were adult, and also juveniles charged with Measure 11 crimes. The juvenile PSRB came about because actually case law allows juveniles to raise what is known as the insanity defense, a mental disease and defect defense. The case is in Re LJ that gives the right to raise this defense. The problem is that nowhere in the juvenile code is it listed what the disposition should be. LJ is a case that was decided in the early 70s, and what this Court of Appeals said in their opinion in LJ is that probably the best disposition for juveniles who successfully assert the mental disease and defect defense is to change the case into a dependency case, handle it as if it was a, you know, abuse or neglect case and put the child into the dependency area. And that's basically what we have in place now. If a youth now successfully asserts insanity defense, the only disposition that is available to a judge is either to just dismiss the case out or to change it into a dependency case. Neither of these are very good options for in cases where the juveniles commit what we all would consider to be extremely serious cases, where public safety comes into effect and we don't, and the dependency area, the dependency of the child welfare area, isn't really equipped to adequately protect the public and provide for the needs of these high needs youth. So in studying this, and so what was happening was a lot of these youth who tried to assert the defense or who had the opportunity to assert the defense but didn't because there's nothing in the code that says what would happen to them if they were successful were being adjudicated and being put into the OIA close custody system. The problem with this is it causes a constitutional problem. You can't have a defense and have the best, you know, the if somebody is successful in the defense, the disposition can't be the same disposition they would get if they weren't successful with the defense. So what we find is that actually not very many of these, not very many youth actually assert the defense. when we started this to look at what would be a good thing, we looked all over the United States to see what other states were doing with these serious youth. And although we came up, other states had some very interesting ways to deal with this, either putting them into a mental health court, or I think there were some cases, a lot of them just put them into the child welfare system. What we decided was that Oregon had a really interesting opportunity because we had the Psychiatric Security Review Board system already set up on the criminal court side. And it seemed to us that probably the best way to handle this and the most efficient way to handle the working with these youth was to try to put together a juvenile PSRB using a lot of the system that has already been set up in Oregon. And that's how we got to the juvenile PSRB, but it was with looking around the United States. These kids are youth that are both developmentally disabled and have what is known as a serious mental illness. That we're looking at. I became interested in this case when I was representing a young man. It was before Measure 11 took effect. It was actually after it was voted into place, but before it took effect. I was representing a young man on murder charges who was 17 years old, who was so developmentally delayed that he didn't know his right from his left. He couldn't recite the alphabet. He could not read. He could not understand why he was being held in detention. The court found that he was able to aid and assist, which is the first hurdle that I think I'll be talking about a little bit later. But the person that he killed, he was already in the juvenile dependency child welfare system, and the person that he killed was his caretaker. So obviously that system was not going to be adequately supportive of him and public safety. I mean, he was already in that system and it wasn't effective. I ran the insanity defense and I lost. And when I went back and asked the judge afterwards what happened, what did I do wrong, trying to improve my legal skills, what the judge told me is if this was in criminal court, if he was hearing this case in criminal court, he would have found that I had successfully asserted the defense. But he had no place to put this youth if he found that I successfully asserted the defense, because that would have put him back into the child welfare system. And it was at that time that I really began to realize how we were violating these children's constitutional rights by not having some kind of a dispositional alternative for these youth.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senator Duffin. I'm Terry Legard. I'm a judge here in Marin County. And I was a juvenile court judge full-time for 6 years. Both Deanne Darling and I are on this committee. The judges support this. I just want to say a couple of things about it. One is these youth are already in the system, so it's not new people coming in when you're looking at the fiscal. They're not new people coming in. They're in the system. So there's a cost associated to what we're doing with them. If we send them to OYA, I would hope that OYA is providing mental health for the mental health needs, if they're committed to OIA, same thing if they're committed to DHS, and that community protection's being considered. And those things have a cost associated with them. We're putting them under a new jurisdictional and governing board that's going to make sure that those two things are dealt with these youth. Mental health issues, whatever they are, and community protection issues. I will say I've been around since 1977 in the legal system, in the PSRB. I'm not sure when it was founded, but I know I was skeptical about how well it would work. And I'll tell you that it's worked from my perspective, and I was a prosecutor, and I was at the AG's office, and I've been a judge since 1994. The PSRB does a good job of dealing with mental health people who commit crimes. You know, modeling that in the juvenile system, I think, is a very good idea. And what we have to understand is there's going to be some cost shifting, is what I think. I've been asking these questions of agencies, and people aren't sure, and I'm sure they'll speak to that in a minute. They don't know who these youth are, how much money they're spending, but they should be providing for the mental health issues, and they should be providing for community protection issues. We're just putting a layer of an administrative layer on it by creating some oversight as to what's happening with them. And people with expertise, I will say, PSRB has expertise. They're making these decisions all the time. The next thing I wanted to say was that the DAs aren't here, but they do also support this. The one in Holmes Haynes will be talking to the DAs Association. She just couldn't make it today. And then lastly, if you have a question for me, if you could ask me now, because I have court starting at 1:30 out at the annex, and they're waiting for me. So I do have to leave. I just came to rain in, so I just asked that.
Judge Leggett, thank you very much for taking time to be here. We appreciate you sharing your expertise, and we also thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Gorman. You too.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So I'm going to excuse myself and let some other people talk. Thank you.
Senator Bowie, next we'd ask Karen Andall from the Oregon Youth Authority to speak to the
very good population. Good afternoon, Senator Gorley and Senator Devlin. The Oregon Youth Authority, my name is Karen Andel. I'm with the Oregon Youth Authority Director's Office here in Salem. The Oregon Youth Authority supports Senate Bill 232. Our agency has been involved in the processing of this project from the beginning. The Oregon Youth Authority currently does serve youth with mental illness and with developmental disabilities. One of the issues that we have discovered over time is, as has been mentioned before, some of the difficulty in determining exactly the number of youth that would be affected, in that youth may be able to, youth who are before the juvenile court may be able to assert this defense, whether they would be actually approved by the court under the defense is not known in terms of numbers. But our agency does believe that as much as we do provide mental health services and services for youth who are of low IQ or developmentally delayed within our facilities and in some of our residential programs, we feel that, number one, it's most appropriate that young people are afforded the same opportunity for this defense as adults who come into a criminal system, and also that there be the very specific sorts of overview and treatment and planning for these young people that may not be able to afford it for to the degree and the length of period of time that it is provided in the juvenile justice system.
Ms. Andall, I have a question for you. You said that there's difficulty in establishing the number of youth who could benefit from this approach. But looking back in time, do you have a way of capturing the number of youth who could have benefited had this approach been in place?
I'll speak briefly. I would like Ms. Osborne, Senator Gurley, to mention it all. This has been an ongoing trial for us. The Oregon Youth Authority, in looking at the youth, we've done very careful study of the youth who are even currently in our custody, even as on a case-by-case basis. And at this point, we believe that there could be approximately two youth currently in our system who would potentially fit under this. We've also had lengthy discussions with juvenile departments. The district attorneys have had input and other agencies who will come before you. And it has been very difficult because there is not currently the defense. It's difficult to know. Ms. Osborne can also speak to this from her experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Please.
For the record, my name is actually Kathy Berger. Marriage does weird things. What we came up with in terms of the fiscal for the number of youth, because obviously that's the big question, is how many youth are going to be there, and there was a lot of concern about if you build it, they will come and will be overwhelmed with mentally ill youth. The first way that we looked at, the number that we determined was that there would be 10 youth in a biennium. And the first way that we came up with that number was I spoke to Phil Lemon, who was then the head of the Criminal Justice Commission, and asked him how many adults successfully asserted the defense, and got the percentage of what the percentage of success rate was versus the number of criminal cases that were filed in Oregon every year that were eligible to assert the defense. We then took that percentage rate and applied it to the number of juvenile delinquency petitions that were filed in a year, and we actually came up with five at that time, and some people thought that youth would be perhaps more successful in asserting this defense. So we doubled it and got to 10. There was a lot of question about that process. So after last session, when this bill died in Ways and Means, we went back to look at that number. And the second analysis that we did was we looked at the number of youth that were in OYA that, taking the assumption that they were in some place in the system, these kids were, they're existing, so there's somebody's taking care of them. So we took the number of youth that we knew in OYA and DHS who were either on probation or in close custody and had serious mental illness, and in the juvenile departments. We surveyed the juvenile departments, and we got that number, and we figured out that, and when we did all the figuring out of who could assert the defense, in other words, who would have been eligible to be in the PSRB because they met the eligibility, the number we came up with was 10. We then looked at the rate of incidence of mental health in the juveniles. In other words, the rate of somebody having schizophrenia, of a juvenile having schizophrenia. We took that rate and applied it to the number of youth that go into the juvenile justice system, and we did that for all of the mental illnesses, the serious mental illnesses that could qualify for the PSRB, and figured out those percentages and added them up and came up with 10. So we're pretty certain that 10 is a fairly good number because we keep coming up with it.
Senator Gordley, yes.
Can I just add a couple of things about the fiscal? I think Judge Leigert, for the record, Kate Brown, State Senator, for the record, I believe Judge Leigert said it very well, but we believe these youth are already in the system, and they're either at Oregon Youth Authority, where I would argue they're not getting the appropriate level of services, or they're in foster homes in neighborhoods near us, where I would argue we're not getting the appropriate level of public safety needs being met. I just want to raise two other bills that became before the Senate, and I can't tell you where they are right now, but one is Senate Bill 1059, which basically provides that a person under 18 years of age who's found guilty, except for insanity of crime, may be committed to secure intensive community inpatient facility, and it provides that the Psychiatric Security Review Board would have jurisdiction over those young people. We passed Senate Bill 1059 off the Senate floor in order to provide the Psychiatric Security Review Board with jurisdiction over the two, I believe, remaining youth in the Oregon State Hospital. So this is not a sort of a new thing for us. The other bill I just want to commend that I passed off the Senate floor, I believe, last week is House Bill 2141. And this allows both the Oregon Youth Authority and the Department of Corrections to transfer persons committed in their custody to state mental hospital for adults, or basically for the children to the children's farm home for both evaluation and treatment if their mental illnesses are severe. And what was curious to me is that this bill had no fiscal impact. It was not sent to the Senate Budget Committee. So there was either a very minimal fiscal or a limited fiscal. And so I was just curious that we're able to sort of do that within the system now and not have a fiscal, yet this bill has, an extensive fiscal, I believe, about $1.6 million for this coming biennium. So I just want to commend to you those two bills because I think that's part of everything we're trying to do here. I would say those bills are totally and completely consistent with what we're trying to do. We are able to do them and absorb the costs within the system. So.
Another question about the fiscal impact, looking at the one of the documents in front of the committee. Federal funds are assumed to be available. Can someone speak to the source?
Somebody other than me.
and how
I still don't understand
the source and how soon those funds would be available.
Senator Gordley, if it's all right, we'll ask Bob Nickel to address that.
Thank you, and welcome, Bob, Mr. Nickel.
Madam Chair and member of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm the administrator for the State Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. The way in which Medicaid dollars get into the analysis is that when we place a kid, either actually we were able to do some of this in the state hospital, but particularly in the community, we're able to bill Medicaid for youth because they're out of their home environment and they become, if they weren't Medicaid eligible before, they become eligible under the household of one requirements for Medicaid. So what we have in the community now is a daily rate of a little over $600 a day. And with a 40-60 match rate, 40% of that is paid for with general fund, the remainder is federal funds, so with Medicaid participation.
Okay. That answers that particular question. My other question is about the makeup of the PSRB and how the measure changes the makeup, if we could establish that for the record as well.
Sure. Madam Chair, what this bill does is to address the fact that juveniles, and this was a concern when we first were, you know, developing a concept for the disposition of youth, is that there was a concern that we were, you know, quote-unquote, adulterizing kids. And so to deal with that, we created a separate board under this bill, which has the same type of, you know, designated board members, but they would all be related to juveniles. So you will see in the bill that we still require a psychiatrist, but they either need to be board certified or eligible in child psychiatry, a child psychologist, a juvenile parole or probation officer, an attorney who's experienced in juvenile trial practice, and finally a member of the general public. So that's why there is in the bill basically a separate panel, board panel, to address these youth rather than the current board that's in effect right now.
Correct.
That deals with the adult.
I was just trying to understand the relationship to what currently exists and what we would be.
Sure. Madam Chair, the process would be the same. We would just use what we've done is basically adapt the current model to fit the kids, the juvenile needs, in terms of having the same hearings, but they will be more frequent because of the time frame. So rather than waiting, you know, 6 months for hearing, they can get them sooner, and we've made some adjustments that way. But the overall process would work much the same. They would come under the board. The board would be responsible for making the decisions of their appropriate placement. We would do that through a hearing process. We would be working with the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services when it came time for them to be, you know, placed in the community and developing a network of providers who would, you know, serve these youths.
Ms. Buckley, are there other people who need to testify as a part of your panel? I want to make sure we
I think that's, if you have any other questions of
Senator Devlin, did you have questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions actually for the OIA representative. The two juveniles that you now have under your direction or custody that you think might fit these requirements or could have fit these requirements if this had been in place, where are they currently in custody or...
Senator Devlin and Senator Gordley, Karen Andel for the record with the Oregon Youth Authority. I might need to clarify my statement that we estimate that approximately two youth per year would come to our custody. We have analyzed, however, all of the youth in our custody who have IQs lower than 70, all youth in our custody who have IQs lower than 80, to try to identify what their issues, their crimes, their current status, and a number of those youth have remained in the facility, but also a number have been transitioned out to community placements as well. There also is a number of youth who, actually have these issues that could assert that are supervised in the community by local juvenile departments where probation is established, yet the youth are served out in the community by services that are appropriate for their needs.
Once this was in place, and this might be a better question for one of the attorneys that are present, once this is in place, if a juvenile was judged responsible except for insanity, they would have to be placed in one of these alternative facilities, correct? They could not even be placed in an OYA facility. It would be akin to taking someone at the adult level and sending them to a state correctional facility.
Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin, that is correct. Kathy Berger for the record. That is correct. It would make it so that they could not be put into close custody with the Oregon Youth Authority. Where they would be placed is based on not only the seriousness of their mental condition, but also whether they're a substantial danger to others, which would be determined, something that would be determined at disposition.
Once if this became law, could any of the cases that have been already adjudicated be reopened?
Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin, no, it would not be eligible for anybody who has already gone through the system.
Madam Chair, I'm fine.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 232? All right, and the gentleman in the Mr. Chase, did you wish to come up, please?
Madam Chair and Senator Devlin, members of the committee, James Taves from the Department of Human Services from the senior and disability side. We're not here to argue with the policy issue at all. I think it's a good policy direction. On the developmental disability side, however, we have some serious reservations about our ability legally to implement this. On the developmental disability side of our service system, we have no closed custody. We have no lockup capacity. Over the course of the last 20 years, we used to have locked capacity for both juveniles and adults at Fairview Training Center years ago before it closed as a result of extensive litigation, and you know much of that history. We got out of that business. In the community, we serve about 30 kids now with some very difficult behavioral needs, many who have been through the courts, and in some cases charges were dropped because we agreed to provide services for these kids. And in many of these settings, we have a lot of security features. They're staffed heavily. They have alarms on windows and doors and things of that sort. But we have absolutely no lockup capacity. So the issue for us is when these kids are adjudicated and if they use this offense, if they're committed to the department and are considered too dangerous to go into conditional release type settings, those are the only settings we have. So we would not have anything other than the network of services and providers we have now, which would be the same ones we would use if kids are conditionally released. Similarly, if PSRB at some point said this child is too dangerous to remain in a community setting under conditional release and revoked or remanded that child back to the department, we have no closed capacity or secure capacity at the department to do that. If we do nothing, the default would be the developmental disability child would go into the mental health system, would have gone into OSH, and now under the other piece of legislation would go to the children's farm home. But I can assure you then the mental health side and the children's farm home would say this is inappropriate, this is not the setting where this type of child should be treated. So that's the issue for us. We can't. And we have not, I mean, we've done some costing on what it would do if we were going to do secure, locked facilities. It's not added to the fiscal of this bill, but I'm very worried that, in fact, that's the direction we'll end up and could even during this biennium. Again, the range of children on the DD side who might assert this defense, we simply don't know. We know of the 30 children we serve, 18 would possibly meet that criteria. How many would? We don't know. The two at OIA, and then we have another 30 kids or so in borderline categories that, depending on how court evaluators would look at them, could. But that's all highly speculative. But I know that at least some of those kids and some of the kids we currently serve in the community, if public safety is the primary issue, which the bill says, public safety is the first issue and then the treatment and the other issues are subsidiary to that, under this kind of defense and legislation, I'm not sure we can even maintain some of the existing children in community services, even with the security features we have, whether that would really meet the litmus test of the public safety being adequately covered. So those are the kind of unresolved issues that we're sort of heading into with this legislation.
The issues that you outline, are those, does the department have an official position on the measure in opposition or neutral? Just trying to understand, get some clarity on the record.
Yeah. I think both Bob and I can say that, I mean, the department participated in much of the planning. We did not participate adequately on the developmental disability side, so that I think the department has been supportive of the policy issue. We had recommended early on that at least for the coming biennium that we amend DD Kids out and look at that and come back and look at what the service system would really require and include that possibly in the next biennium. I know folks are very resistant to that and concerned that we then create sort of unequal groups in terms of their legal standing. But we could well be in a position where we can't actually comply with the requirements of the law on the developmental disability side.
Okay. I would like, did you wish to speak to this?
Madam Chair, if I could please, Senator Devlin. Again, for the record, my name is Bob Nickel, Administrator for State Mental Health and Addiction Services. I think the department's official position has been to be neutral on the bill, though we, as Mr. Taves said, have participated over the last 4 or 5 years, too, with the worker, particularly on the mental health side. So we're supportive of the concept, but because the potential costs are so difficult to determine and are not in the governor's recommended budget, we needed to take a neutral position. We were able to not take an opposition position because we do support the general idea here.
Yeah, very good. Of the folks who spoke previously, including Ms. Buckley, do you have a counter to the concerns that have been expressed by the department?
Chair Gurley, I believe Kathy Berger would like to address the committee.
For the record, Kathy Berger. Chair Gurley, I do have something to add. As even Senator Brown said, and I think we've all said, these children, these youth are already in our system. They aren't going to be new youth to our system. If we were to take out the DD kids from this bill, which the proponents are not opposed to if that's the only way we can get this bill passed, but I will let you know that you have set up an excellent equal protection argument and lawsuit against the state of Oregon should a DD youth try to assert the defense and not be able to because the situation that I mentioned earlier, I testified to earlier, the case I testified to earlier, and the judge would be willing to come forward and say, I did not give this defense because there's no secure place to put this youth. You've set up an equal protection lawsuit against the state. The problem with taking the DD kids out is the defense exists. We don't need this bill for the defense. Those DD kids could still assert the defense. If they are successful in asserting the defense, their case is changed into a dependency case, and they are given to DD services. And the judge has the ability under the juvenile code to tell DD services what type of placement to put this youth in, including something that would come very close to what we would consider close custody. So the judge has the ability to right now put them into that situation. What would be missing would be the oversight of the Psychiatric Security Review Board. In other words, the judge after they give them to DD, would lose control over where the placement of this youth was and whether it was in a situation that was looking towards public safety adequately. That's what the PSRB gives the state of Oregon, is that oversight to make sure and to monitor the youth when they're in the community, that close monitoring to make sure that public safety is being protected. And that's what we lose by taking the PSR, the DD kids or any kids out of the PSRB. The other thing that I think I need to say is that when we went through this and we were looking for these youth, one of the things that I think is difficult for anybody who's never tried one of these cases to understand is how incredibly difficult this defense is to prove. It is not an easy defense. I have tried it 3 times in my 18 years as a lawyer, and I've been successful once. It's the cases, what you have to be able to show is not just that the youth or the person that's committed the crime has a mental disease and defect, but you have to show the connection between the mental disease and defect and their inability to, at the time of the commission of the crime, either not understand the difference between right and wrong or not be able to conform their behavior to the requirements of the law. In the criminal justice system, we have a lot of DD people and mentally ill people, unfortunately, in the Department of Corrections. Many of them have tried to assert the defense and failed. There's not been one case that I know of in a jury trial where a jury has said a person is guilty but insane. It's been usually court trials where that has happened, or where both the state and the defense experts come to the same conclusion and an agreement is made between, and a plea essentially is worked out. But a jury has never in the state of Oregon given that defense, awarded that defense, or said that it's been successful, and it's a very difficult defense to say. So just to say, that's the problem of looking at the youth that are already in the system. We can say that there's 30 youth in the system that meet the criteria that are either in the juvenile justice system and have either the serious mental illness or developmental disability, but to be able to say that they could be successful in asserting the defense is really difficult to go back and try to figure out whether that's possible.
Were the department's concerns raised and discussed before the Senate Committee on Judiciary? I note from the record that there were at least two hearings on this measure before that committee.
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, yes, the department did raise the concerns, and I think that the record would show that.
All right. Well, actually, they're not reflected in the staff measure summary I see in front of me, so I'm just trying to make sure that we add to the record.
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, I think the way in which we expressed the concern was through the fiscal impact analysis, and we've all acknowledged that we're really not sure how many youth would be adjudicated. One of the things that I'm not sure if we put this on the record, but we should say that the use of the PSRB option has increased dramatically over the last 3 or 4 years among adults. So we're trying to understand what's going on out there in the court system, why it's being used increasingly, whether that's more mentally ill people getting arrested or whether the courts are more favorably inclined now than they were 5 years ago is not real clear to us, but it does look as if there's increased usage.
I think the other thing I would add, Madam Chair.
Would you hold that microphone, excuse me, in front of you so we're sure to hear you? Thank you.
I think the other thing I would add, Madam Chair, is, I mean, even with the argument that the defense is very hard to invoke, disabled kids in Oregon are very underserved. It's very hard to get into our system. So if there's a better way to do the disposition on these kinds of cases in terms of attorneys, judges, DAs looking at it, and it's a vehicle to help access services, I think the likelihood is going to rise because it is very difficult, and I admittedly we do a very poor job of adequately serving kids with disabilities overall, not to mention kids with severe behavior problems or criminal behavior.
Very good. Anything additional from this panel?
If I could just add one more thing. The department's analysis is, just so that it's clear, assumes more than five kids a year, and I wanted to make sure that that was clear, that we assume 10 kids with mental illnesses, and or in that number they may also have a developmental disability along with the mental illness, and I believe the number for developmentally disabled kids was 5 per year. So that's a little bit different than the earlier numbers that were described. So just in order to understand our fiscal analysis, I wanted to make sure that was on the record.
Sure. Thank you very much. At this point, the chair is going to have to excuse herself for a dental appointment up in Portland. I'm going to ask Senator Devlin to take the gavel and continue the meeting. Again, this is a public hearing and not a work session on the bill. We appreciate very much all of you who've been able to participate. And Ms. Bakken, I'm sorry I won't hear your testimony in person, but that's right. That's right. So again, thank you all. Thank you, Senator Devlin.
Well, as a committee of one now, Ms. Bakken, I hear from you regularly, but
you're not my senator.
No. Please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, I'm Mary Bakken, and I'm here today representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and we're here to support this legislation, the concept. I just have to tell you that I cannot express strongly enough what a great step we believe this is. We spent the entire interim with a work group of our members from mental health, criminal justice, juvenile justice, both the adult side, the juvenile side, both institutional and field services. And the one frustration that we sort of walked away with after all the discussions were complete was, what are we going to do with kids who need more? That need more in the way of mental health services, that need more in the way of treatment options, and who need more in the way of services early on. And I am not naive enough to think that this is going to solve the world's problems. But I think just the mere acknowledgement that we are failing a group of kids with very serious needs is a step forward. And if we only rescue 5 a biennium or 10 a biennium, it is better than we're doing now. And we ought to take that step. I think that by having the Psychiatric Security Review Board sort of branch out and specialize in one area with juveniles who have serious mental illness, it is an acknowledgement on our behalf that we know that there's a problem that we have not been able to address and that we're at least attempting to. You know, I am not certified smart on this issue. I represent people who are, but they're not here. I can tell you that they know that there are serious holes in this system, that this will help at least identify a hole, and maybe in time we can fill it, make it big enough that we can fill the problem up. So with that, you know, I just want to say that I think that this is a great bill. I think that we should move it forward, and we're prepared to do what we can to help. You know, we don't represent most of the people who work in the juvenile justice system. We just have a smattering of field services folks and some county people. But I can tell you they're very vocal, very frustrated, and will welcome this sort of a move to acknowledge that they have kids that need more than we're able to give them now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would wish to testify at this time? As been indicated, this bill was scheduled for a public hearing and not a work session. Just a personal sentiment on this. I think the case has been shown. It's also been shown that literally everybody that's in this room, whether they're in broad support or whether they're neutral have worked on this quite a number of years already, trying to resolve this issue. If we still had a Joint Ways and Means Committee, and this was actually a subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, I'd be a little bit reluctant to pass it out now directly to both floors, or directly to a Joint Ways and Means Committee. But since we no longer have a Joint Ways and Means Committee and we have such an extensively long process, I personally would feel comfortable passing it out knowing that it would go ultimately to the House and that you would have more time to resolve these issues. You don't have a lot of time. You probably have no more than 3 to 5 weeks. But optimist here. but at one time, I would, because this process has become so cumbersome, I would hope that the parties would be willing to let this move on to the House. It would be a little bit difficult to take it. It would have to go by the Senate floor, and you'd have to explain that it was a work in progress, but we've done a work in progress before on the Senate floor. So just with that, anyone else that wishes to say anything? Okay, with that, we are adjourned.